Morning. We're continuing with the Gospel of Mark, and very exciting portion of the Gospel of Mark. And let me just say what a privilege it is to look at the life of Christ, to see what He did, because in that we see what He's doing today. God is no different from how He was 2,000 years ago. That is not even computing with Him in terms of time. God is the same forevermore. And what is so wonderful about the Gospels is that we're not seeing some abstract philosophy or thoughts about who God is and what He does, but we actually see God in action. We see how He's working with real people in real situations. People like us, right? And that is what's so wonderful about the Gospel. So let us continue from Mark 3, verse 7. And it says the following: Jesus went out to the lake, that is now Galilee, with His disciples, and a large crowd followed Him. They came from all over Galilee, Judea, Jerusalem, Idumea, and from the east of Jordan River, even from as far north as Tyre and Sidon. The news about His miracles had spread far and wide, and vast numbers of people came to see Him. Jesus instructed His disciples to have a boat ready, so the crowd could not crush Him. He had healed many people that day, so all the sick people eagerly pushed forward to touch Him. And whenever those possessed by evil spirits caught sight of Him, the spirits will throw themselves to the ground in front of Him, shrieking, "You are the Son of God." But Jesus sternly commanded the spirits not to reveal who He was. Now, that's challenging, those verses. And I think the problem is that we often live lives that are very carefully cultivated. We cultivate very carefully our careers, our CVs, our degrees, our associations, our bank balance, our laundry. The list is going on. Some more than others, right? But all of us are very careful in how we cultivate our lives. And in that very carefully cultivated lives, we try so hard to manage everything so that nothing will catch us by surprise. It must be kept on when you hear Coldplay playing, eh? Talk about carefully cultivating. Okay. I think they came here as well. But in that place where we so carefully cultivate everything, we leave no space for the unexpected. And often no space for the supernatural. And people often ask me, what is it that really get you to the place where you really have faith? I'm not talking about faith. I'm talking about faith, right? I'm talking about do or die. This must happen. I'm trusting God or else. That sort of faith. That sense of desperation. And the honest truth is often it's a place of need that gets us there. When we're in a position where there's no other place we can go. And I think that's exactly the place we don't want to be as human beings, right? I mean, who wants to say in small group, you know, this week, my life is sucking big time? We don't want to hear that. All right? We don't want to go there. And in the process, we cultivate things so carefully that often we cultivate the supernatural presence of God out of it. Because here's the thing about the supernatural. It is the evidence and the sign of God who fills what we cannot fill. Who does what we cannot do. Who helps where we really need help. And yet Jesus is faced with people of dire need. And I want to tell you that if you open your eyes, you look around you, you see dire need every day. You see, when we follow Jesus, we must be careful to safeguard our worlds and our lives not so much that we do not make space for the God who can do what no one else can do. Because that's certainly who God is and that's certainly what He does. And see, what these verses are talking about, it talks about the authority of Christ. And what is authority? Authority is a certain ability to do something that is given. It is not something that's inherent to the person that has authority, but it's something that's delegated and given. And the way in which you yield and, use that authority, that ability, is all important. Now, what is very interesting here in that last verse is that Jesus, I mean, He's already surrounded by many people. if you know the history of a country, you've noticed that all those areas that's actually mentioned are very divided areas. Judaism at that time was not a united front. These people hated one another. And all of them came together to follow Jesus because they had a real need in their lives. Now, the first thing I would do as a good pastor is I would say, you are healed, spread the news. Let's put it on a poster. Thank you. Right? That's the first thing we would do. But now Jesus does exactly the opposite. He comes and he says, tell no one. Why is that? Now I think what freaks us out when it comes to the supernatural, when we come to God doing incredible things, is that for us often it's sort of a measurement of how good we are. Right? Am I strong enough? Am I advanced enough in my faith? Do I know enough? So that when I say something, when I pray for something, it happens, oh, okay. Me and Jesus, we like this. Oh no, nothing happened. Me and Jesus, we're not friends on Facebook. Alright? Big problems. But the thing about the authority of God and the thing about the power of God is that it's really focused on the needs of people. And the authority that we get, and maybe let's read on to the next couple of verses, because I think it's indicative of what I want to say here. It says the following. Afterward, Jesus went up on a mountain and called out the ones he wanted to go with him. And they came to him. Then he appointed 12 of them and called them his apostles. Apostles means sent ones, by the way. They were to accompany him and he would send them out to preach, giving them authority to cast out demons. These are the 12 he chose. Simon, we call Peter. All right, we know Peter, right? Impetuous, the guy that betrayed Jesus. James and John. Interesting enough, Mark does put you included in brackets. He does say about them, the sons of thunder. I don't know if you know where that nickname comes from. Sons of thunder is when they called unto Jesus to destroy a town because the town didn't quite receive them like they wanted to be. I mean, these are the guys that received the authority. Sons of thunder. That must have been quite a standing joke there. Andrew, Philip, Bartholomew, Matthew, Thomas, James, the son of Alphaeus, Thaddeus, Simon, the Zealot. The Zealot, the guy that wanted to kill everyone. Let's put the knives away before we go to sleep. Judas Iscariot, who later betrayed him. This is not really a very nice list. We know this. And these are the guys that Jesus gave his authority to. And here's the thing that you must realize. The authority and the power of Christ has got nothing to do with your inherent ability or goodness. The authority of Christ is all to do with God's great desire to do good things in this world. Now that is really key to everything and understanding everything here. Because here's the problem. If it is about myself and my need, I only exercise my faith as I need it. If it is about how good I am and how close I am to God, well, then I'm always insecure whether I can really pray for something or not. Is that person going to be healed? Am I good enough? Am I not good enough? In both instances, the power of God does not meet the real need of people around us. Here's the thing that we really learn from Mark. What we learn is that God gives us authority regardless. Because the desire of God is to do good in this world. And wherever you go and you do the good of God, you pray for people, you cannot miss the will of God. You see, the point there then is not if a person gets healed or not healed, the point is reaching out to the person that's got need in that moment. And God will do abundantly above and beyond what you think is possible or not possible, and He will surprise you often. You will pray for something when you don't feel like praying and something amazing will happen. You will pray for something when you feel you're on fire and nothing will happen. But that's not the point. The point is reaching out to a real need in the world around us, because that is the message of Christ. That is Christ. And therefore, I'm challenging you this morning to move out of a carefully cultivated life and to realize that God certainly has ability and want to do incredible things, but not to make it a measurement of ourselves, because that's not the point. Now let's go on, because there's something else that you need to realize with this, and I'm telling you a full story. Sorry. Let's go. Next slide. One time Jesus entered the house and the crowds began to gather again. Soon he and his disciples couldn't even find time to eat. They were busy. When his family heard what was happening, they tried to take him away. Now, this is his family. These are the people that's closest to him. In the Mediterranean culture, the most important value above all was family. To be honest, in our culture, the most important factor is economy. Money. In that culture, family was everything. I mean, you were named after your father. You were named in a lineage. You presented your lineage to somebody to determine who you are. Before they knew, if you would come to a person and say who you are, you didn't say, well, I'm CA and, you know, I studied there and this is what I do and this is what is my heart. They didn't care about that. They were asking, what's your name and whose son are you? And then they would judge you according to that. Family was everything. Now, his own family come, and what happens? When his family heard what was happening, they tried to take him away. He's out of his mind. They said, he's nuts. Well, thank you, my family. But the teachers of religious law who had arrived from Jerusalem said, he's possessed by Satan, the prince of demons. Well, thank you so much as well. That's where he gets his power to cast out demons. Jesus called them over and responded to the illustration. How can Satan cast out Satan? He asked. A kingdom divided by civil war will collapse. Similarly, a family splintered by feuding will fall apart. If you go to the next slide. And if Satan is divided and fights against himself, how can he stand? He would never survive. Let me illustrate this further. Who is powerful enough to enter the house of a strong man like Satan and plunder his goods? Only someone even stronger. Someone who could tie him up and then plunder his house. I tell you the truth. All sin and blasphemy can be forgiven, but anyone who blasphemes the Holy Spirit will never be forgiven. This is a sin with eternal consequences. He told them this because they were saying he is possessed by evil spirit. Now, if you exercise the authority of God, that is the quickest way for people to persecute you. And is it not weird, because it is really the quickest way to address somebody's dire need? Why would somebody persecute you for that? Why would his own family come? People were being healed, people were being delivered, and they would say, you're nuts. They're supposed to say, you're doing amazing work. People are getting help. Why would the bastion of religious authority in the day come and say, hey, you're possessed? If he's healing people, he's doing good works. You see, the thing is, the moment we move in the power of God, the understanding of that we often had is that people would love us. But the truth is, people fear the supernatural. And perhaps we even fear the supernatural. Because it means there's a presence of God that cannot be denied, which means that I need to change my life, because I'm really in the presence of one that is far greater than I am. John 1 starts with the sort of comment where it says that darkness and light, it doesn't go together. The darkness could not comprehend the light, but it can't always contain the light either. You see, when something unexpected supernatural happens, everyone must take note and they must retake stock of their own lives. And we don't like doing that. It shatters our paradigm. And often people are not going to respond well to that. And I want you to be aware of that. And I don't think it's such a bad thing either, because if you think about it, and let me just say that for a moment. If Van and I would pray for somebody, okay, say I clap the floor here, duh. Gone. Tins is gone. Alright. Had too much coffee and too little sleep. He's gone. Alright. So Vanna, the good pastor that he is, thank you Vanna, he prays for me. I stand up from the dead. Okay. Wow. Next week the service will be full, because I want to see number one if somebody dies again, and number two if I get resurrected again, right? So now what happens next is that people say, but now hang on, this Vanna guy, he's got special powers. He's got a hand that probably glows in the dark. So now, I'm just talking nonsense, right? That's not theologically correct. So now, they start bringing dead people here, okay? So church gets very interesting. Worship, half of the people stand up, half of the people lie at the back, where they get stacked. Okay, I'm talking completely nonsense, forgive me. So now Vanna goes, he's got a good and a strong job every week. I mean, this guy must fast 24/7 to get going. So now he prays. So 1 out of 10 people that he actually lays his amazing, super powerful hand on gets resurrected. I think this building will be soon too small. Yes. So now, the next thing. Say now, Banner, he becomes really incredible. And every person that he prays for actually becomes alive again. Banner would be the most powerful person in South Africa. You see, with the power and authority of God, comes great potential for change, but also great potential for destruction, depending on what's actually happening in his heart and what's actually happening in our hearts. And therefore, sometimes somebody going against our grain of wanting to be accepted, wanting to be loved, really gets to the real question of why am I doing this? Am I doing this? Am I praying for somebody because I want to feel good about myself? Or am I really committed about the good of those around me? Now let's go on. The last point for today is that authority is not really about the power as much as it is about family. Let's go to the next slide. Jesus says, again, very radical stuff. Then Jesus' mother and brothers came to see him. They stood outside and said word for him to come out to talk with them. Now this is the same guys that said he's nuts. There was a crowd sitting around Jesus and someone said, now listen to this, this is the ultimate insult in ancient times. Your mother and your brothers are outside asking for you. Jesus replied, who's my mother and who's my brothers? Then he looked at those around him and said, look, these are my mother and my brothers. Anyone who does God's will is my brother and sister and mother. Now, this is profound of what he said of his own family. But even more profound to us is that the use of the power of God is never about the power itself. It's about realizing that we bound up in this new type of relationship where God becomes our father, where we're part of a family. And what we do as a family is really important. You see, the exercise of power is never about the individual as much as it is about the community of God doing incredible things. And I really want to challenge you. I'm going to talk to you more and more about this concept. Because the thing about Cape Town is that it's uniquely individual, uniquely self-focused, uniquely self-absorbed. And that grinds in against everything that the gospel stands for. Because in gospel view, everything is about the community. About the people of God. Loving one another. You know, it's interesting this weekend we had a family camp. We had all the mummies and daddies there. And amazing, amazing time. Really enjoyed it. Lindsay at the back, she made very, very lack of food. I'm not going to give you my side profile because then you can see how lack of the food was. I'll just suck in my stomach as I'm standing here. But you know, one of the things that the mummies and the daddies really mentioned was the difficulty of trying to raise a child on your own. And it just reminded me again that, you know, we're not meant to be alone. We're meant to be a community, the people of God, that live in one another's space, that help one another, pray for one another, that do together. I want to challenge you with that. If your expectation of church is, this is a place where I come to receive something good for the week, that already is a good step, but that surely is not enough. You see, in this community, we brothers and sisters in Christ, endowed, given the authority of Christ to do incredible things, to pray for one another, and it's never about my own ability or my own goodness. A child can pray for you, and you can experience the power of God, for argument's sake, better than what a pastor can pray for you. It's never about the person. It's about the goodness of God. It's about the heart of God for people. So let's just stand this morning. Let's bring ourselves before God.